Hello there, and welcome into another edition of the JMAC Podcast. So glad that you are here with us. Please take a minute and subscribe, become a patron of this broadcast. Go to jmcfarland.com, become a monthly subscriber, monthly patron, or one-time patron. I would greatly appreciate that. That would help me pay some of the bills that are involved with bringing you this broadcast every day. Also, please like, subscribe, and share wherever you are viewing this content. I want to start out today with just a bizarre story, and part of me says, this is a joke. I'm glad it's being treated as a joke. Just bizarre, and it has to do with the good governor of the state of Utah and his last name. He published this on Twitter. I hope you can see it. Actually, part of me says, I hope you can't see it because it's ridiculous. It's a bunch of nonsense. And part of me just says, this is a joke. You can see it was received by the governor's office on the 5th. It was tweeted out on the governor's Twitter, saying, really grateful for the criticism and constructive feedback I get from constituents that demand that I, and then it says dot, dot, dot. I'm going to read some of this to you. Maybe I'll read all of it to you, but you tell me, is this a joke? You know, in today's world, I don't know. I just don't know anymore. Maybe you do. This is what it says. Dearest Governor Cox, I do not know if you know this, but when people say your surname, it sounds like the word blank. It's obscene. Us decent people here in Utah will not stand for it. The Honorable Republican Party will not stand for it. Most importantly, I will not stand for it. Because of your reluctance to change your foul, dirty, and obscene surname, myself and thousands of other Utahns will be sitting in protest, not standing, until you change your heinous surname to something less offensive. This is a social justice issue, and we will not be denied basic human decency. If our simple request is not met, we will assemble and do what democracy was made to do by recalling you from the office because of your filthy surname. This is not a communist dictatorship. And then in all caps, this is the great state of Utah. We do not accept sick jokes to run rampant in our civil institutions. We demand a response to this letter, and we expect to hear back from your office soon. Well, your response was he posted it on the Twitter for all to see. What do you think? Joke? Or is this really where we're at today? I mean, I can pick it apart. Should I treat it as though it's legitimate? First of all, if you thought his name was obscene and you think that he should be impeached or removed from office because he won't change his name, then why'd you vote for him? And if you didn't vote for him, well, you're just angry at the guy, right? If Utahns are going to stand up in mass against his name, they had a simple answer. Don't vote for him. So the idea that this is a we, they're speaking in the we, there's no way this is a we. This is one person, guaranteed. The Honorable Republican Party will not stand for it. Well, they did, and they will. I can't believe I'm treating this as legit. The part where it says this is a social justice issue, if you ever wanted to demonstrate that you know nothing about what social justice means or is, you did it. Congratulations. If you wanted to write a memo to the world saying that you don't know what the words social injustice mean or social justice, you did it. Congratulations. And then it says, we do not accept sick jokes. Well, obviously, this is a sick joke, right? Is anybody taking this seriously? Part of me is frustrated that the governor even put this out there because this gives a voice to whoever this person is. And I wish that they didn't do that. I hope. I wish. What am I trying to say? I wish they didn't do it. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, moving on to more important issues. More and more Republicans are calling on the impeachment of Joe Biden. And this is one of those circumstances where you have to ask the question, is this principled or is this partisan? Do I have to really ask the question? Well, I thought, okay, what have they got on him? What do they have on the president of the United States? Of course, they're bitter that their guy was impeached twice. Both times, you will recall, I didn't support the impeachment either time. Because I think the standard for impeachment should be incredibly high. And I felt it was lowered dramatically. And so what happens when one party lowers the standard? Does the other party say, well, we're going to hold our standard because we're principled? No, they're not. They're going to say, you lowered your standards, so we'll lower ours. And this is what I said was going to happen, and now, of course, it is happening. So this is Ohio Representative Bob Gibbs seeks articles of impeachment against Biden. So I thought, okay, what does he have? So he asked his GOP House colleagues to consider filing articles of impeachment for an unconstitutional order to extend the eviction moratorium and for his dereliction of duty in securing the southern border. Representative Bob Gibbs, Ohio, sent a letter to his fellow Republicans urging them to seek impeachment because Biden continues to disregard his constitutional duties and boundaries. Let's think about it. Remember, I always talk about how there's such a danger that in fighting for what you believe, you actually start embracing the attitudes and behaviors of those with whom you disagree, or you start going against your very core principles. Core principles such as we uphold the Constitution. Isn't this interesting? So it says the president is derelict in his duty, having repeatedly said he lacks the authority to extend the CDC's eviction moratorium, then extending it anyway. His actions on the border represent a negligence in keeping America secure. We need to cut this off at the pass now and show we will not stand for clearly unconstitutional actions. So now impeachment is about dereliction of duty? Is that what impeachment is about? Now it's about doing unconstitutional things? Is that what impeachment is about? Let's think about this for a minute. No, let's not think about it. Let's go to the document. It's like going to the big board. Remember the Jerry Lewis telethon when we go to the big board and see where we're at? In this case, it's let's go to the document. Here we go. What does the Constitution say about impeachment? Quote, the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Did you see any claims of treason? Did you see any claims of bribery? Do you see any high crimes and misdemeanors? You might be saying, well, he did something that was unconstitutional. No, that's not a crime. That's not a crime. The way that you handle unconstitutional acts in this country is not to impeach. We've had presidents on both sides of the aisle with executive orders say that do things that I believe and others believe are unconstitutional. That's not cause for impeachment. That's cause for a court challenge. That's what is supposed to happen. You issue a court challenge, and then the courts will decide, is it constitutional or not? You don't get to decide. The courts get to decide. If they uphold it, then it goes through. If they say it doesn't, then it gets stopped. That's who decides constitutionality. We do not decide constitutionality through the impeachment process. So here it is again, my dear fellow Republicans, who claim that they want to be true to the Constitution and uphold the document, are now suggesting that impeachment be used for dereliction of duty. Do you see that here anywhere in the document? Can you imagine a world where all it takes to throw out a sitting president is the belief by the other party that they are derelict in their duty? Can you imagine? Well, that's where we're heading, right? That's where we're heading. Because in theory, even though this is what the document says, all you need for impeachment is control of the House and the Senate. You can pretend and feign and act like there was some high crime or misdemeanor, but you really don't need it because you're the ones who get to decide. This is where we're heading. Once again, one party saying, you did me wrong. You lowered the standard. And so instead of saying, we're going to be better than that and we're going to uphold the standard because we stand on principle, not on party, we now see many saying, well, we'll lower the standard even more. And this, my friends, is how the document dies. This is how democracy dies. In the constant lowering of standards for political gain. The way it survives is when we stand on principle instead of on party. All right, let's move on to COVID. A couple of stories here that are important to me. We are learning more and more about the Delta variant and children, and why are school districts being asked or asking for permission to have mask mandates again? Well, this is New York Times and Yahoo. You believe who you want. The challenges facing young patients come as pediatric COVID-19 cases rise sharply, driven by the highly contagious Delta variant and the fact that well under half of 12 to 17-year-olds are fully vaccinated and children under 12 are still ineligible for the vaccine. Doctors say even youths with mild or asymptomatic initial infections may experience long COVID, confounding, sometimes debilitating issues that disrupt their schooling, sleep, extracurricular activities, and other aspects of life. The potential impact is huge, said Dr. Avindra Nath, chief of infections of the nervous system at the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. She says, I mean, they're in their formative years. Once you start falling behind, it's very hard because the kids lose their kids' self-confidence too. It's a downward spiral. She's making an interesting point here. She says, one of the reasons we don't want to shut down schools is to keep kids going. We don't want them to fall behind. Once they fall behind, it's very difficult to catch up. But what if they catch COVID and then they have long COVID? They could be set back for years. And then this locally, this was in the Deseret News. This is the state epidemiologist. This is Dr. Leisha Nolan. She told the Utah State Board of Education in Salt Lake City that math models suggest COVID-19 cases could quadruple from current levels by fall. She said COVID-19 cases among school-aged children are rising along with the general population, largely due to the Delta variant. And she said some very interesting things. She said, many people perceive COVID-19 mostly affects older adults. The truth is it also can have significant impacts on children. She said, since the beginning of the pandemic, 82,000 children from newborn to age 18 have been diagnosed with COVID-19. Among them, 752 were hospitalized, with 46 requiring intensive care units. Our unit stays. She says 82 Utah children developed multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome, where it affects really many organ systems and causes really significant disease. She says within Utah's population ages 0 to 18, children in the K through 12 group represented 92% of COVID-19 cases, 81% of hospitalizations, 78% of intensive care unit administration, and 67% of the multisystem inflammatory syndrome cases. That according to data presented to the board. Now, I will be speaking with, with state epidemiologist Dr. Leisha Nolan. She's going to join me on the podcast on Thursday to answer specific questions. If you have questions you want me to ask her, please put them in the comments and I will send them her way. This will be part of the Informed Utah broadcast. That's part of the JMAC podcast, which I'm firing up again aggressively. We're going to be covering COVID in the state. We're going to be covering in depth the drought and the water issues. I've got several interviews lined up for that. We're also going to be covering upcoming elections. In fact, tomorrow, a brand new candidate for District 4, somebody who will be running as a Republican against Burgess Owens, getting ready to announce. He will join me tomorrow, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. So lots coming up on the JMAC podcast and Informed Utah as we dial in and focus in on the state of Utah. All of that is a great reason for you to please take a minute and scan that flow code that you see on the screen or go to jmcfarland.com and become a monthly patron. We just had somebody sign up for $5 a month and they said, you know, it's all I've got. It really helps when you consider that to bring this service to you on all these different platforms, there are monthly fees attached to all of it, so you can help me pay my bills and bring this content to you. So please go to jmcfarland.com or scan that flow code and become a monthly or one-time patron. I love it. I appreciate it. It means the world to me. And those of you who are already subscribed, thank you. And if you can, I understand, but you can help still by sharing this content, liking it, subscribing on wherever you see it on that particular platform. Thank you. This has been the JMAC Update. Join me Tuesdays and Thursday nights at 9:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time for JMAC Live, where we take your live comments on a lot of these issues. With that, my friends, have a wonderful day.